Some renewed presidential attention to the conclusion that most Americans are not prospering.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Today, fast food workers in cities across the U.S. are walking off the job. They want a raise to $15 an hour. Meanwhile, President Obama made the case for, among other things, increasing the minimum wage. Marketplace reporter Chrissy Clark from our Wealth and Poverty Desk is here. Hello, Chrissy.
Hey, David.
So how did the president bring up this minimum wage thing in his speech?
Well, he put it in the broader context of what's happening to the middle class in America today, how a lot of good-paying jobs, especially in manufacturing, are being replaced by minimum wage service sector jobs. And he pointed out the minimum wage is so low today compared to the cost of living, it's hard to make ends meet. What I found really interesting is that he also seemed to be trying very hard to frame this in a bipartisan way. He made multiple references to the Republican Abraham Lincoln's feelings about work. At one point, he quoted Adam Smith, the father of capitalism.
And for those of you who don't speak Old English, let me translate. It means if you work hard, you should make a decent living.
And this is an idea that's getting a lot of attention right now, Chrissy.
Yeah, there's the fast food worker strike today. And in fact, the president made a specific shout out to those folks in his speech. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are about to begin a push to raise the federal minimum wage to $10.10 an hour over the next few years. In a recent CBS News poll, 2/3 of Americans, including more than half of Republicans, said the federal minimum wage should be higher. But the restaurant industry says an increase would actually push them to downsize their workforce. And given the state of Congress right now, it's unlikely that anything will get passed very soon.
All right. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark live. Thank you very much. Did you know that when you do volunteer work, it doesn't register from the point of view of the economy? Gross domestic product doesn't count volunteer work, nor does it assign value when you care for a sick or infirm relative. It turns out that families do an enormous amount of unpaid caregiving, and it's a value that many argue needs much more recognition. Marketplace's Chris Farrell keeps an eye on economics for us. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So people may give up their jobs or cut down their hours at work to help an elderly or an infirm relative. Now, they do this out of love, of course, but often also because there's no alternative.
Right. The economic value of this unpaid work, it's enormous. MetLife Foundation, they tried to come up with what is the total cost here? And we're going to include lost wages, lost Social Security benefits. And they came up with a total cost for people who are 50 years and older taking care of their aging parents of $3 trillion.
So some people are saying, all right, you should have bought long-term care insurance and prepared. It is not so easy. You and I have talked about this on this program.
You know, and basically it's too expensive for most people. And quite frankly, it's an unprofitable product for most insurance companies. You know, and then you have Medicaid, the safety net, right? But you have to spend down all your assets before you end up in the Medicaid system. You're kind of on your own. It's this caregiving system.
Think about this, though, Chris. The country relies on people caring for family members for long-term care. Yet, when you're not working doing the caring, you're not saving. Yet, we're always getting browbeaten to be saving more. It's a little hard to save if you're not working.
Particularly, this browbeating is coming from Washington, D.C., and, you know, you need to be saving more. And what is Washington doing? There was this commission on long-term care insurance, and it was part of the whole fiscal cliff negotiations. Remember that?
And I remember that commission was bipartisan.
And they come up with this study, and like all these studies, it's a wealth of information. So anybody who's interested in the issue, you know, go read the study. But they essentially whiffed on everything. Did they deal with the financing? No, they couldn't agree. So you have this report. We can't come up with a solution. You're on your own.
Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell is also a MetLife Fellow. Now, that's a foundation that tracks some of these issues as part of its focus on financial inclusion. Chris, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, David.
Some will be tempted to raise a glass today on this 80th anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition. One of the legacies of that law is the lingering existence of dry counties here and there, but especially in the South. The number is steadily declining, in part due to the economics of not selling alcohol. Sally Herships reports.
Lubbock County, Texas has a lot of new options for dinner and drinks.
One of them is Johnny Carino's, that funky door bistro and wine restaurant.
Eddie McBride is president of the Lubbock Chamber of Commerce. With the exception of one retail strip, Lubbock was dry. But that changed after a 2009 ballot initiative. Until the new law, restaurants were reluctant to move in.
You see about a 6% increase in retail sales in the area when they switch from dry to wet.
Ray Perryman is a Texas economist. He says towns that don't offer alcohol can lose out on other sales as well.
If you go to another area, to go to a liquor store, and while you're there, you may stop and buy groceries. You may do some other shopping at local stores just because you're out and you're making a trip.
The Center for Disease Control says states spend billions on excessive drinking. But Perryman says all consumers have access to alcohol. So even those areas that ban drinking end up with alcohol-related bills for health care, crime, and justice without getting any of the benefits of selling the drinks. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And Pantone, the outfit that does standardized colors, especially for commercial art, asserts that the big color for 2014 is going to be orchid. If you don't know what the color orchid is, think a little mauve, a little magenta, a little puce. I don't know what those colors are either. Good old Pantone 18-3224 Radiant Orchid is purple, as far as I'm concerned. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.